Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What up? It's the Crossover Pod Friday edition. I'm Howard Beck, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. A little different approach on today's podcast, and I hope you'll all find it interesting and worth your time. And please indulge me for a minute or two longer than usual in the intro here. The pod's about anti-Semitism and Holocaust denial and the consequences of the things we say and do in a public space, the damage it can cause, and the possible ripple effects of a single tweet. So yes, this is sort of about Kyrie Irving and that awful film he tweeted about a few weeks ago, but the conversation is not so much about Kyrie or the way he's handled this or the suspension the Nets issued. Everyone, including me, has said and written plenty about Kyrie by now, but what's been troubling me ever since the tweet and the subsequent firestorm is the ideas contained in that film, the twisting of facts and history to create this sinister narrative about Jewish people, because those same tropes have been used for decades, centuries even, to persecute, discriminate against, subjugate, and terrorize Jews around the world, including here in the U.S. As a Jewish person, I am at this point less concerned with what Kyrie did and said, though, to be clear, that all matters too. But I'm less concerned with that than what all this tells us, because it tells us that these tropes and the bigotry that drives them are still ever present and dangerous. It tells us you can make a really sloppy, poorly edited film based on this bigotry and sell it on a major platform. And from there, all it takes is a single misguided, and that's the word I'm going to stick with for now, misguided, a single misguided person with a massive social media following to disseminate it to millions. I'm less concerned with what Kyrie believes than I am with the reminder or the realization that there are, in fact, many people who do buy into these tropes, that there are many who will be introduced to these ideas for the first time through this film, and that some of them might then act on the bigotry that they've internalized. Last week, on the same day that Kyrie again stood in front of the media and defended what he had done, the FBI issued a warning about credible threats against a Jewish synagogue or synagogues in New Jersey. In an area of New Jersey, by the way, not far from where Kyrie himself grew up. The FBI later made an arrest of someone they described as having radical extremist views and, quote, an extreme amount of hate against the Jewish community. Last year, New Jersey reported the second highest number of anti-Semitic incidents in the country, behind New York, according to the Anti-Defamation League. I'm not saying, of course, any of this is because of Kyrie or anyone else, but the timing just underscores the danger, the justifiable concerns when you are indulging these kinds of ideas. In recent weeks, we've seen banners proclaiming Kanye was right about the Jews in various places around the country. And according to the ADL, there were 2,717 anti-Semitic incidents reported in 2021. It's a 34% spike from the previous year, and the highest total the ADL has recorded in their 40 years of compiling the data. These incidents have been rising ever since 2016. I cover the NBA for a living, and this is my 26th season. I've seen a lot of good and bad along the way, and controversies of just about every sort. I've seen racism and sexism and homophobia, too. But until now, I've never seen a member of the NBA community promote, and yeah, tweeting that link qualifies as promotion, anything as vile and hateful and dangerous as this film that Kyrie posted. So I wanted to have a discussion about the potential effects, the impacts, the bigger picture, and maybe even what role the NBA can play in all this. Not just in talking to Kyrie, and Adam Silver did so earlier this week, but in educating everyone, including NBA players, on these issues. Look, there aren't many Jews in NBA locker rooms at any given time. We know this. And this is a mostly black league, so players are very familiar with the discrimination and hatred and abuse that their community has suffered over the course of history in this country. But it wouldn't be surprising if they were barely aware or maybe unaware of the history of anti-Semitism or even of the Holocaust. So my discussion today on the pod is with Dan Grunfeld, who of course is Jewish and did spend a few minutes in the NBA before playing 9 years professionally overseas. Dan's father, of course, is Ernie Grunfeld, who played 9 years in the NBA and spent many more years running NBA franchises. Ernie's parents were Holocaust survivors, and Dan wrote an incredible book called By the Grace of the Game about his family's journey and about basketball being a kind of salvation for the family. We discussed that book on the pod last November, and I hope you go check it out if you hadn't listened to it yet. But I brought Dan back to discuss the fallout from this Kyrie saga, what comes next, and from the perspective of someone who knows better than most of us just how scary this all is, how words and propaganda and bigotry can lay the groundwork for one of the greatest atrocities in human history. These ideas need to be combated, repudiated, and dispelled. This isn't about a single tweet or a single film. It's bigger than all of that. And please stay tuned to the end, because Dan's grandmother, Lily, who is a Holocaust survivor, now 97 years old, joins us for a few minutes to offer a few thoughts of her own. A quick final note, I had some technical difficulties this week, so my audio is a little less pristine than usual. Also, I found myself kind of struggling for words a few times because, frankly, these issues as hard. I'm not sure I was quite as eloquent as I'd like to be. So apologies for all that, but the conversation, I think, was still a really good one. I hope you agree. Okay, my conversation with Dan Grunfeld and his grandmother, Lily, is coming up next, so stick around.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
Now, very pleased to welcome back to the show, Dan Grunfeld. Dan, how are you, sir?
Good, Howard. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, of course. Thank you for joining me again. It was just about a year ago at this time that I brought you on, because that was when your book, your wonderful book, came out, By the Grace of the Game, The Holocaust, A Basketball Legacy, and an Unprecedented American Dream. That book dropped about this time last year. A quick refresher for people. Dan's grandmother, Lily, who he calls Anyu, she's a Holocaust survivor, and Dan's father, Ernie Grunfeld, NBA legend Ernie Grunfeld, and former NBA GM of multiple teams, Ernie Grunfeld, only NBA player in history to whose parents were Holocaust survivors. So, Dan, you bring a really unique perspective to any discussion about anti-Semitism, about, frankly, Holocaust denial, which was part of the film that Kyrie Irving had tweeted about recently. And I thought of you immediately. One, because let's be honest, there aren't that many other Jews who have passed through the NBA or whose families have passed through the NBA for that matter. And I wanted to have just a good, thoughtful discussion about this. That's not so much necessarily about what Kyrie did, what's in the film, what the NBA should do. I do want to touch on those things as we go, but I wanted to bring you back on the show because your book was so beautifully done and so poignant, and it was
about the, you know, it was about some of the worst things that have happened in our world's history, the Holocaust. But it is also about hope and resiliency and about basketball and about how that comes through your entire family's history and your career, your father's career. And so I thought this would be a good way to kind of discuss the unfortunate event being Kyrie Irving posting this film that engages in every kind of anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish trope, and that also denies the Holocaust, which I know, you know, hits as close to home for you as anyone. So let me just start with this. I had never heard of the film. I imagine you had never heard of the film until Kyrie Irving tweeted about it. Rolling Stone wrote about it. Others wrote about it. And we started getting drips and drabs of what was in the film, including, of course, that the idea that the Holocaust was a quote unquote falsehood, one of many falsehoods that Jews have perpetuated. I know how that hit me. I know it was a large part of why I finally decided to write about this along the way. For you, given your family history, what did you think when you first heard about that aspect of the film?
Yeah, it's terribly upsetting. You know, when you say it hits close to home for me, that's the truth. I'm talking to you now from my grandmother's apartment. You know, I'm visiting with her and she's 97 years old, you know, survived the Holocaust, lost both parents and five siblings. And my grandfather is no longer with us. He lost both of his parents and both of his sisters in the Holocaust. And these are my dad's parents. And as you mentioned, my dad's the only player in NBA history and the only player in any of the major American sports whose parents are Holocaust survivors. And so any time you hear about Holocaust denial or not, you know, respecting that event in history and mourning it and using it as an opportunity for all humanity to come together and realize what's at stake when people aren't treated fairly, it's always terribly upsetting.
Yeah. So the film gets tweeted, promoted. I know Kyrie Irving didn't like that word, but when you tweet something, especially without context or explanation, it comes across as promotion. My great concern at the time that I saw it and in the wake of it was there's a lot of this that's already circulating out there. A lot of these kinds of beliefs, these ideas that a Jewish-run conspiracy to rule the world, to run the world, so the Jews control the banks, Jews control media, all of these things, all of these tropes have existed for decades, a century even, and have been the pretense for all kinds of persecution and terrorism, frankly. So my thought was, you know, not so much about Kyrie, but that this is a new perpetuation of and any furthering of these tropes. And so, you know, the conversations I've had, and I know you've had these too over the last couple of weeks, is amongst other Jewish folks who are around sports, who are around the NBA, other Jews, period, is what does the moment call for? What do we do? I think you said those exact words when we spoke last week. What does the moment call for? And I think it's something I've struggled with because you don't want this to necessarily be about one person, Kyrie, or one person, Kanye West, for that matter. But these ideas are dangerous. These tropes are dangerous. And on the same day that Kyrie Irving was again getting combative with the media last Thursday was a day that the FBI had issued a warning in New Jersey saying they had credible evidence of a threat against synagogues in New Jersey. Not saying that those things are tied together. It's not about Kyrie, but it just means that these things are very, very present. And these ideas, these tropes are dangerous. And so what do we do with that?
Yeah, listen, and I mentioned to you earlier, like I had trouble sleeping a little bit this week, right? Just thinking about some of these the real world effects of speech like this, right? So we're talking about specific individuals now, but, and I write in my book, you know, anti-Semitism is one of the great parasites of mankind. You know, it's always there under the surface. And I write in the book, how could that much hate disappear? Where would it go? You know, and so it's just an unfortunate reality of our world that these things exist. And when we speak about them, particularly if you are prominent and have a platform, like words really, really matter. And particularly for someone like Kyrie, who's so influential, he's one of the great, great NBA players. There are youngsters around the world who look up to him as a basketball player because he's such an amazing basketball player. And so that's what really has been so worrying to me. It's less about the individual and more about the effects of that act, which is to, you know, to expose young people to these ideas that are so dangerous. And just to give you a little bit of context around some of the real world effects of just anti-Semitism in general, my 4-year-old nephew goes to preschool at a synagogue in New Jersey. So now there's an FBI threat of violence, right? So of course that affects my family. My grandmother got me a Star of David necklace, which is very dear to me, you know, as a gift from my grandmother. And she had to call me last week and tell me not to wear it in public. You know, and so, and of course, that's not because of what Kyrie said or because of what Kanye West said. It's because of just the rising tide of anti-Semitism at large. But certainly people with platform who make comments contribute to that. And it's scary, you know, and my grandmother survived the Holocaust and fled communism to come to the United States. So she didn't have to say things like that to her grandson, right? And so that's really sad. And so it's been scary, but it's also been sad. And, you know, another thing, I've gone to a couple of Jewish organizations for different reasons, and I have to call beforehand to ask about security, you know, because I have a wife and kids, right? So these are just kind of the realities of what anti-Semitism at large, the effect on everyday people.
Yeah, and I think, again, as a backdrop here, I don't have the stats in front of me. The stats, you know, don't matter in terms of the actual numbers, but there has been, you know, record highs, record levels of hate crimes and threats against Jewish people in this country over the last few years. This has been rising for several years. And of course, this community is not the only one, right? We've seen a spike in anti-Asian violence and threats. We've seen it against various subgroups within our country over the last several years due to a number of causes that we don't necessarily have to go into, but it's been stoked. It has been stoked and inflamed. And a film like this does that even further. And so that's the danger. It's not so much, I mean, we've all been struggling with, all right, what does Kyrie really believe? And can we get him to explain himself? And that's been a real struggle as this has all gone on, because I do think for any of us who are around the game and love the game, and for me, as someone who covers the game, of course I want to know what he really thinks. Was this, as some have said, oh, it was just a mistake. Oh, he tweeted this thing. He didn't really know what was in it, but he said he watched it. So, okay, if he watched it, and he tweeted it, is he just saying this is interesting, or is he saying there are some things worth listening to here? And again, I don't know whether it really matters, Dan, to either of us, whether Kyrie believes these things or not. I hope he doesn't. But it's more about that when these ideas, when these tropes get broadcast to that many people, and he's got millions and millions of followers on social media, there will be people who watch it and who, whether they may not care whether or not he endorsed it. They're just like, oh, I'm going to check this out. And then they may walk away feeling a certain way. That's the danger, right?
100%. You know, though, that movie and the book, they were number one on Amazon in certain categories, right? Because it piques people's curiosity, whether it's just to see what it's all about, whether people believe it, whatever the case may be, it's spreading and perpetuating a very hateful message. And there's precedent, right? We're talking about my grandparents being Holocaust survivors, and I, you know, writing my book, I know the history of the Holocaust so well. And actually this will come out on the week of the anniversary of Kristallnacht, right? Which is the anniversary of the Night of Broken Glass, when, you know, there were riots across Europe against Jewish businesses and Jewish people. And it was kind of the crescendo of a lot of talk and a lot of the, you know, the same type of tropes and the same type of ideas about Jews kind of, you know, it all came to a head, and this one really terrible night where there were riots against Jews, and then the aftermath of that ultimately became the Holocaust. And so there's precedent for hate speech, you know, and whenever that is out there, you know, we have to just be very vigilant about it.
Yeah. And I want to make two quick notes about the film, which I have not named during our conversation. And I did not name when I wrote about this issue last week. And I'm still not going to name it. But that film, yes, it has risen to the top of one subcategory on Amazon, probably fueled by all the coverage. Yes. And a lot of people are saying, see, the media did this, not Kyrie Irving. And, like, you know, let's be honest about this. The film got broadcast to millions of people by Kyrie. And yes, then we all wrote about it, and maybe millions more learned about it. But we are obligated to write about it. We are obligated to, I didn't sit through it. A lot of my peers in the media did sit through it to then explain what was in it. And I'm grateful that they did, so that I did not have to. Has it now fueled more purchases of it? Is that putting money in the person's pocket who created this film? Unfortunately, yeah. But, you know, awareness is the important thing here. And I would rather people be aware of it. So this is not to blame who brought it to, like, yes, the coverage probably increased its sales. Kyrie Irving is the one who decided to tweet it out, and we are obligated then to discuss it and write about it. Like, that's number one. Number two is, please, my fellow media members, can we stop calling this thing a documentary? A documentary has some intellectual rigor to it and some research to it and some facts to it. This has none of those things. This is a film in the loosest sense. So I've just referred to it as a film. It's just dumb semantics, and maybe it's just me being obnoxious as a writer. But like, calling this a documentary to me feels like it's giving it way too much credit.
Yeah, fair. I mean, I haven't been exposed to it. I never heard of it. I know of the content of it just from what's been out there. But yeah, I just think the point of it is, like, whenever these really dangerous messages of hate are perpetuated, that's problematic, and there are real world effects from that.
And, you know, the other thing I'll just say is this, you know, people saying, so why, you know, why would, if they were asking me, then it's been directed at a lot of media members, why are you guys spending so much time on this? It hits differently when it's in the world that you are, you know, living in or working in, right? Like, Kanye West says things, other people who have said things, David Duke back in the day, or others, racists, bigots of all stripes. I hear these things, they all have an impact. But I cover the NBA. I'm also based in Brooklyn. I go to a lot of these games. I've had conversations with Kyrie Irving multiple times over the years, in previous calmer times. Did a big feature on him when he was going into his second year with the Celtics. It just kind of hits closer to home when it's coming from the community that you kind of run in the same circles as, right? Like, I'm not part of the NBA. I cover the NBA. And so it hit me a little different than, say, Kanye West, who is not an artist that I was a fan of in the first place, right? All of it's dangerous, all of it's alarming, but yeah, it is, like, this is my beat. This is my world.
Yeah, sure. And I mean, listen, we are part of the game. You cover the game. I played it. We love the game. And Kyrie is someone who we've rooted for in the past, who's given us great thrills on the court. I think we were both there in 2016 in the Bay Area because we saw each other when he hit the shot for Cleveland. Yeah. And they won, right? It's a great, great transcendent basketball player. And so to hear, you know, these type of messages, of course, it hits us a little differently because of how close we are to the game.
Yeah. So I've struggled with this. What should we expect of the NBA at a time like this, right? We know that the NBA prides itself on, you know, all the usual modern buzzwords, right? Diversity and inclusion and respect for all, you know, all peoples, all beliefs, all races. And the NBA has obviously been very politically engaged and politically active, and players have been very politically engaged and politically active. And so nothing goes by without being, you know, flagged and discussed. But I've been trying to figure out, like, what should we expect of the NBA? So the NBA has not acted. As of us taping this, and this is going to run later in the week, so by the time it comes out, there will have been probably more news after Adam Silver has met with Kyrie. I don't know what will come of that. But as of this point, Kyrie's serving a 5-game suspension levied by the Nets. There's been nothing from the NBA specifically. And I don't know. I'm not so much concerned with whether or not Kyrie Irving needs to be disciplined. I'm more concerned with what the NBA does broadly about messaging or about education or about trying to foster a discussion. I don't know where that lands. Where do you think that lands for you?
Yeah. And I think that's the right question, is kind of, where do we go? Not necessarily what's the discipline, right? But how does the NBA stand for, you know, equality, for, you know, stand on the right side of things in all instances? And so I think education is a big part of it. I think discussion is a big part of it. You know, we want allyship in a lot of different ways, you know. So I've been a little bit disappointed that there haven't been more voices in this instance. You know, and I have ultimate trust, respect, admiration for Adam Silver and the NBA and how they've handled so many important issues, and the WNBA as well, always have been leaders, have always stood against any type of hate speech, any type of prejudice. And that's I think who the NBA is, and those are the values. And however that, whatever that looks like, it needs to be applied to this situation because it is serious. You know, when you're talking about a group, or when you're, you know, there's messages being shared that are so destructive you know, to a certain group. I think it has to be taken really, really seriously. And I hope the community sees it that way as well. And that you hear voices kind of coming out and taking a strong stand against this kind, you know, because it's never okay for a group of people to be, you know, subjugated in any way. You know, it's just, it's never right.
Credit to LeBron James, who when asked did weigh in, and I thought pretty strongly on this. So I appreciate that from LeBron. We haven't heard much from other players. And, you know, part of this is, too, you know, I joked about it earlier. I mean, it's just, you know, it's basic facts. Like, there haven't been that many Jews in NBA history. And at the moment, as far as we know, there's only one, Denny Avdia, who's Israeli and Jewish. And, of course, you know, reporters went straight to him the other day to ask him about it. And I think, Dan, the fact that there just aren't Jews in NBA locker rooms, right? There are Jewish people in all manner of other positions around the league, but not in locker rooms. And I think if there were, there would probably be more conversations. And so if something came up like, hey, I saw this film, or hey, a buddy of mine was saying, you know, this thing about, you know, the Jews and this conspiracy or whatever it may be, however tame it might sound or however outlandish it might sound, whatever the thing was, NBA locker rooms, a lot of conversations about just about everything happen. Our perspective is probably not there very often. And so I feel like it's easier for these things to possibly kind of these conversations to go on unchecked. And I'm not saying that they are, but, you know, if a white player in an NBA locker room said something that, you know, even if it wasn't outright racist, if it were dealing in racist stereotypes, that player would get checked immediately, right? Like, hey, what are you saying? What do you believe? What are you trying to tell? That would be a conversation that would happen immediately. There would be accountability within the locker room. There are very few Jews in NBA locker rooms, as I'm saying. So like that would not happen. Getting checked in real time would not happen. So again, thinking out loud, I just think that that's part of how these things can kind of linger without there being a real discussion. And so I don't know if the NBA then needs to have more programming around all this, in addition to all their other programming that is trying to foster inclusivity and understanding. I don't know what they do or don't do on this, but maybe they need to.
Yeah, I think, of course, it's an evolving situation. It's an open question. Again, I have great faith in the league to educate in the right way, to foster these really important conversations. I can tell you something that I've seen just be a very, very powerful tool for understanding it, particularly with this issue, right? Which is anti-Semitism. We're talking about the Holocaust. Visiting the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. is a very powerful experience. You know, so, and I always say, like, you don't necessarily leave the museum the same exact person as you walk in as, because it's just, it's a history that, you know, when you're immersed in it for a day, and it's a somber way to spend a day, but there's something, it's an important experience. And, you know, Ray Allen, who wrote the foreword for my book, who was on the board of the Holocaust Museum, appointed by President Obama, he would take teammates to the museum every time they played in Washington, D.C., because it was one of his missions to educate people on the Holocaust. You know, he saw Schindler's List in college, and he said, this is not just a Jewish tragedy, this is a human tragedy. And he's right about that, right? By the way, 6 million Jews were killed in the Holocaust, but millions more were killed, right? Hate knows no bounds, and it can affect so many different people. And so, and I've talked to some of Ray's Boston Celtics teammates who visited the Holocaust Museum with him, and they said, I didn't really know much about the Holocaust, but that really was so eye-opening. And so that's an experience that I just think is really powerful. But there are, like you said, conversations to be had, and I don't know what the exact right answer is, but I think taking it very seriously is important right now, because this is a serious theme.
So Dan, we talked a little bit about, you know, players having spoken out or not spoken out. Quick thing, you know, I appreciate the fact that Shaquille O'Neal and Charles Barkley both came out, I thought, very strongly on the TNT broadcast, and Reggie Miller even criticized players for being silent broadly on this. I don't know what exactly to make of that, and I don't know if we should criticize them or not for that. I would rather, of course, hear more players coming out condemning the messages of the film, not condemning Kyrie necessarily, but it's a tricky thing, right? Like, I've always said, it's not my place to tell NBA players or people I cover what they should or should not stand for or speak up on. I would appreciate it on something like this if they did, but it's a difficult thing, but it leads me to a couple of different thoughts, and I'm just going to throw these all out, and then you can pick up wherever you're comfortable on this. But one is this: we're all products of an American school system that, depending on city, neighborhood, and a lot of other things, may or may not give us the full education that we need about our world's history, and maybe even about the Holocaust. I don't know what NBA players or athletes in other sports, period, anybody has learned or not learned about it, or what they've learned or not learned about anti-Semitism. You know, in a league that is 75 to 80% black at any given time, they very much know what the black experience in America is and don't necessarily need to be taught. I'm sure they obviously need to be taught some of that too, but they're learning from their own community, their own relatives, about the civil rights movement and about the history of oppression and subjugation in this country. So this is somebody else's history. And I don't know what guys have or have not learned. This is also a league where guys come in after very little or sometimes no college education. So I don't know what they do or don't know. I bring this up because a couple of conversations I've had in the last week with other people around the sport, people who are Jewish, who are saying that part of their concern about what Kyrie put out there is, whether he believes it or not, there's probably a lot of people who do. And maybe Kyrie does believe it. I don't know. But there are players who probably do, who have heard some of these same tropes, who have had these same tropes repeated to them. And especially because a lot of these tropes are pitting blacks and Jews against each other. By the way, people who are celebrating right now, folks, the white supremacists and all the other bad actors in this country who hate all of these groups and would love for us to all just be fighting each other. They're having a field day, the white supremacists and all the trolls on Twitter. That's part of the danger here, too, which leads me to this point from Ethan Strauss writing in his Substack. A quick semi-facetious qualifier here. Though I am mentioning Ethan Strauss's Substack, I'm not necessarily endorsing Ethan Strauss or his Substack. I'm just going to tell you that this was part of a piece that he posted about this recently. He says, "And what do NBA players happen to believe on the Jewish topic? How many players share Irving's general outlook? Is it 5%? Is it 20%? Ethan writes, "I couldn't tell you, but it's a non-trivial amount." And Ethan spent a lot of time in NBA locker rooms as a beat writer before going to the Substack route and writing about a lot of things, including the NBA. He says, again, this is Ethan Strauss, I'm quoting, "I've been in locker rooms when the Jews were brought up. I've heard whacked out conspiracies, admiration, scorn, oddly earnest questions about how, quote, you people are so good at making money." He says, "Was I offended? Not really. I think I preferred it to the standard white-black humor that comes with a lot of awkward player-to-reporter jabs. Any banter that disrupted the routine was welcome in a world where I was only visiting. But I mention it," again, still quoting Ethan here, "I mention it to point out the following. Kyrie Irving's views on the Jews would not qualify him as some outlandish NBA outlier. He's nuts," again, I'm just quoting Ethan here, "but his brand of nuts is fairly normal fare, even from a variety of athletes you probably like and root for." I don't know whether Ethan is correct on that or not, but he is not the first person I have heard suggest that part of the concern should be that maybe this is not some isolated viewpoint. And again, I don't even know what Kyrie does or does not believe at this stage. Maybe by the time this podcast comes out, he'll have explained it further about which parts of the film he does believe and which he doesn't. But the idea that these themes, these ideas have been circulating and may be embraced by some, that's what's got a lot of people really worried. So I've just spit out a bunch of stuff, but this is, again, my generalized concern about where the NBA goes from here.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's certainly possible. And individuals hold different beliefs. And for me, I'm ultimately concerned, and what kind of keeps me up at night is the messages that are shared for impressionable people who, you know, the youth who look up to athletes, and just having really constructive dialogue, sharing messages of love, right? Trying to be allies for each other. You know, there are many marginalized communities and we all need support from each other. And so it's impossible to know exactly what Kyrie Irving thinks about these themes. Although, listen, he tweeted something that was so problematic, and so he has to kind of figure out how to communicate his viewpoints on that. But yeah, there are likely other players who share similar viewpoint or have those viewpoints, but there are a lot of players who don't. And there are a lot of players who support different communities and are, you know, and so I think to the extent that we can have honest conversations, people can stand up, be allies for one another, you know, that's what it takes, right? That's what the moment requires, you know? And so just more of that is what we need.
And by the way, like, if there are pockets of players that believe some of this stuff, it wouldn't make them any different than any other subgroup or workplace or whatever. In every category that we could come up with within our society, you're going to find some percent that believe some of these things.
100%. If you were to say there are people in the NBA, I'm sure, who have all sorts of ideas about different type of things, right? This is just one subset of that, because the NBA is a group of 450, 500 players. So it's a subset of population, and people in the general population feel different ways about different things, right? So it's no indictment of the NBA or NBA players. NBA players are amazing. There's so many great, you know, great forces for good in the world, and so many amazing things going on. And yeah, everyone has their different opinions, but I just think this is a time for dialogue, a time for understanding, a time for education, and being really mindful of the messages that we share, because particularly these NBA players, they're so influential, you know, and these words, you know, can be really destructive. And I mentioned earlier some of the real world effects of some of the anti-Semitism that's going on right now. Again, this is not just attributed to Kyrie Irving or to Kanye West, right? There's a lot going on in the world, but when these bad forces are at play, it affects people really deeply.
Yeah, no doubt. Before we bring your grandmother in, curious, you spent 9 years as a professional basketball player around the world in different countries. You did spend a little time in NBA training camp as well with the Knicks when you and I first met many, many years ago. Your father was you grew up in the NBA basically because your father was playing and then running teams. You know, you've seen the best and the worst of it, I'm sure, and he has as well. Do you recall your dad ever encountering anti-Semitism during his playing days, or talking about having to deal with this in real time as he went through his career?
No. And you know, that's one of the most beautiful things about the game of basketball. It's just a connector. It brings people together, right? It doesn't matter what race, religion, color, ethnicity, it doesn't matter. The game is a wonderful connector. And so, yeah, my dad never talked about anti-Semitism that he experienced playing basketball. He experienced plenty of anti-Semitism throughout his life, as have I, but the game is beautiful in that way. You know, it brings you together. And that's what I hope that, you know, this dialogue and discussions can come out of it, right? It is positivity, it's understanding people. And yeah, it's people like Kyrie, who have really prominent platforms, who have their beliefs, but being really, really mindful of the messages that they share, because there's a big impact to them.
Yeah. And listen, you and I both have probably heard every version of this from everybody we've talked to over the last couple of weeks. And I have plenty of friends who, you know, do want kind of like the book thrown at Kyrie and all this. And I'm not sure that anything productive comes of that myself. I find myself in the position of just wanting this to create the kind of conversation you and I are having. And hopefully these are conversations that are being had in a constructive sense within NBA teams. Hopefully that the NBA and the players union can foster. I don't think at a time like this, what we really need to worry about is you know, how to discipline somebody, or some sort of vengeance, or what is the proper punishment. Like, that's not getting us anywhere. And so I do hope that this eventually moves away from a conversation about Kyrie and what price he should pay, and more about just how we tackle these issues. You know, these just the hate machine that's out there that will keep stirring this up, because it'll be somebody else next week and the month after that if we don't contain it.
Yeah, no, I think it's right. And listen, there are consequences for your words and for your actions, and there have been consequences in this instance. But yeah, we'd love to move towards healing and understanding and growing, right? And everyone has the opportunity to do that, to learn, to grow. And so we hope that that's what comes out of the situation.
Absolutely. Well, let's bring your grandmother in if she's got some time.
Absolutely.
Hello,
this,
Lily.
This is on you, but you know, yes. Her friends call her Lily.
Yes. Lily, it's an honor and pleasure to have you join us for part of this conversation. So thank you for making some time. I wonder, as you go through your life, and you've probably seen various versions of this over the course of your time in the U.S., when these issues come back to the fore, when they're in the news, when somebody is spreading some of these old tropes, how do you respond just in your own day-to-day when these things come back into the conversation?
When there's anti-Semitism, how does it make you feel?
Not too good. It brings back memories, you know, and I have plenty of them.
How often in the course of your life have you heard people say this idea that the Holocaust was made up?
It didn't happen.
Yeah, do you hear people say that it didn't happen?
I wish they would be right. But they, unfortunately, they are not. Because my parents were killed and five of my siblings in the Holocaust. Seven people from my immediate family. And many more, of course, you know.
70, right? 70 from kind of the more extended family were killed.
Yeah. Does it surprise you all these years later that there are still people who would deny that the Holocaust happened or who would try to downplay it and say that it was somehow exaggerated? Does it surprise you that these ideas still are around?
Well, it surprised me because I'm sure they know it happened. But they are denying it because everybody knows it happened.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
So what do you say at a time like this to friends of yours or to anyone who might ask about how we deal with anti-Semitism and dealing with denial of the Holocaust and all these things? What should we do?
It's very scary. And I'm very sad about it.
Yeah.
You always say, right, spread love, right?
Not hate.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, I very much appreciate
love.
Yes. Well, I appreciate that. And by the way, thank you, too, for sharing your story through Dan's book with the world. I'm sure, as Dan and I discussed a year ago, yeah, this was very, very difficult for you and many of your relatives to relive this, but it's a really, really important story. It's a very moving story. And I was so moved in reading it. So thank you for being willing to share it with the world, because I think we all benefit from learning about your family's history and the resiliency for Dan to be sitting here in front of a Zoom camera with me today.
I have to thank Dan that he wrote that book. And
he did a wonderful job.
My family story will go on.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Lily, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Dan, thank you so much. Anything in closing before we go?
No, Howard, listen, thanks for having me. And it's just important to have these discussions. And I just really appreciate it.
For folks who didn't, by the way, for folks who didn't listen to the first version of this podcast, when we discussed the book at length, you can go back in the Crossover Archives and find the conversation Dan and I had. I think it was November of 2021. Might have been Thanksgiving week, in fact.
Right.
And if you haven't, go pick up the book, By the Grace of the Game, The Holocaust, A Basketball Legacy and an Unprecedented American Dream by Dan Grunfeld. You can find that, obviously, bookstores everywhere. Dan, my friend, appreciate you so much for hopping on and talking about this, discussing it and your family's perspective. Very grateful. Thank you.
Thank you, Howard. I really appreciate it.
Okay, that's it for today's show. My thanks again to Dan Grunfeld, to his grandmother, Lily. Thanks to our producer, Shelby Royston. And especially thank you all for listening. Remember, you can hear Chris Mannix and me every Tuesday on The Crossover with all the latest NBA chatter. And on Fridays, it's me and a guest. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. And hit me with all your feedback on Twitter, as long as Twitter is still there, at Howard Beck.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.